This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Ending COVID insurance. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Health insurance companies are restoring deductibles and co-pays after initially providing full COVID coverage. Here are the patients facing big bills.
On the investment front, how to avoid buying and selling at the wrong time. You'll hear advice beyond just be diversified and avoid volatility.
Guess which nation has dreams of a medal at next year's Winter Olympics? The Desert Kingdom. Hear how Saudi Arabia is preparing.
And college athletic programs, hurting from pandemic losses, are looking to regain revenue through booze and gambling partnerships.
This one's kind of a long time coming, and that there are a lot of stadiums where they've actually sold alcohol for a long time. LSU famously drank the West Virginia football stadium dry in like 2010 when they went to visit for an away game. But I think there's more and more that have started to embrace alcohol in the last calendar year.
Lane Higgins at the Wall Street Journal on more universities selling alcohol in their stadiums on football Saturdays. Well, last year, as the pandemic took hold, U.S. health insurance companies declared they would cover 100% of the cost for COVID treatment, waiving co-pays and expensive deductibles for hospital stays that frequently range into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. But this year, most insurers have reinstated co-pays and deductibles for COVID patients, in many cases even before vaccines became widely available. More from Chris Rowland, business of healthcare reporter at The Washington Post. Chris, take us through this.
Insurance companies, by and large, voluntarily decided to waive all deductibles and copays for people for their COVID treatment. So that includes, like, you know, costly hospital stays, doctor visits, you know, all kinds of testing, MRIs, you know, pneumonia treatment, the whole gamut. You know, they were under pressure to try to, you know, give folks some kind of relief. And this is what they came up with. But, you know, they avoided any kind of federal sweeping government mandate to do this, and they did it voluntarily on their own with a variety of expiration dates. Some were announced at the time, some were imposed later. But then what's happened is that those waivers of deductibles and copays have indeed started expiring as early as last year, but then really in an accelerating wave this year.
Is that tied to, generally speaking, the rollout of vaccines? Is that when they sort of kind of wash their hands of the other stuff?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that they say they tip their head to that, but they also feel like I was told that insurance industry feels like COVID is something that's here to stay. It is going to be a long-term expense for the healthcare system and insurers, and they feel that it is appropriate now, after the beginning of the pandemic, to begin shifting some of those costs back on to patients, as patients do bear costs of things like cancer or diabetes or heart disease. So that's really, I think, a little bit more of the logic. But certainly, you know, the availability of vaccines, I think, help them and give them some political cover. But the problem is that, as you and I know, January 31st, you know, a lot of people did not have access to vaccine. First of all, there wasn't even enough being made by Pfizer and Moderna and J&J at that time to even satisfy the population. And the earlier batches, of course, were earmarked for people, you know, over 70 years old and in nursing homes and things like that. So there was a huge volume of people who could not get vaccine, but did indeed, find themselves falling sick and getting hospitalized with COVID. And, you know, just because of the timing of when they got sick, they had to pay thousands of dollars in deductibles.
Right. We're speaking with Chris Rowland,
reporter about the business of healthcare for the Washington Post. He's written a piece entitled "The Days of Full COVID Coverage Are Over." I think, the frustrating thing that stood out for me in reading your story was that it seems like none of the entities involved here can give any of the patients a precise amount of the bill that they're going to receive. And that lack of transparency is just incredibly frustrating, I'm sure, for the patients.
Yeah, it is. I think it's very frustrating. And you also have to feel like a lot of these people, may have been laid off during the pandemic. They may not be able to work because they have COVID or they have long hauler symptoms. They're very sick. They're having trouble focusing and concentrating. Imagine having long haul COVID and having brain fog and having to work through, these explanation of benefits and these bills and collection agencies, all these, pieces of mail arriving. It is very difficult for a lot of people. And I think that, a lot of families are helping their loved ones cope with this. But it is kind of like, return to business as usual for these people in the, the insurance world and the healthcare billing world.
Yeah.
So, initially, this pandemic was so horrendous. There was a sense that we need to give people a break. Then that sentiment ended. And now they're just being thrown into the usual mix of, baffling medical bills, unexpected costs, surprise billings, out of network rules, deductibles, co-pays, uncertain amounts of co-pays for different pharmaceuticals. I mean, it's just, everybody knows how difficult it is. And now just imagine people with COVID, navigating that.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Rowland, reporter at The Washington Post. Coming up next, changing jobs to avoid burnout. Dell's semi-annual sale is the perfect opportunity for a significant business upgrade. Save up to 45% on Dell computers built for business with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, enjoy special pricing on Dell docks, monitors, servers, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Succeed anywhere with Windows 10 Pro. Speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today to find the right tech for your business with fast, free shipping. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. New research from WorkHuman has found that 64% of us have experienced burnout in our careers, and 41% said it's happened in just the past few months. Another survey found around 70% said we'd leave our current job for another one that offers better resources to reduce symptoms of burnout. In-depth analysis from Julie Bauke, career strategist and president of the Bauke Group. Julie, how do you see this?
The numbers really haven't changed. I think the source of the burnout has changed. So, for years and years, we've been talking about how the American work life has to change because we don't take all our vacation time, what little we get. We are so worried if we take vacation time that we're going to be replaced. And we've just got this kind of 24/7 technology enabled culture with work. And then COVID hit, and any remaining shred of ability you had to separate work from the rest of your life evaporated.
Yeah.
And so all of the things that stress us out went into one big mush ball, and we are as stressed out as ever, but just for different reasons.
All right, so what about the possibility that this is just a phase? Maybe this stress will ease as we get back to the office and interact with our colleagues again.
It might, but remember, we are so many of the folks we talk to, we talk about, the old great resignation. And what we're seeing, though, is that most people are, or many, many people, put it this way, that time away from work and that ability to kind of sit at home and really think about what do I want out of the rest of my life and how do I integrate work into that? And so there's a lot of stuff going on between people's ears right now in terms of, is this job and career really what I want to do? So I think as you bring back people into the office, which is still happening in dribs and drabs, a lot of those people are gonna go, yeah, after they get back, they're gonna say, yeah, this is as bad as I thought it was.
Oh, wow.
And, the stress level will be there because they'll be like, this isn't what I want to do. But what we find is most people don't know what they want. So a very common phrase we hear is, I don't know what I want, but I know it's not this. And so that's a real stress point right there, because you stick with what you're miserable with because you have to have something, but then you get in this spin and you can't find the time or the energy to figure out what you might want to do next. And then the years and the decades just fly by. That's why we're, in general, as a people, pretty unhappy at work.
Thanks, Julie. Julie Bauke, president of the Bauke Group. Coming up next, colleges abandoning moral qualms.
Did you know most of the seafood on display at your grocer has been thawed out just to look fresh? Unless you cook it on the boat, peak freshness only happens when it's frozen right after it's caught. That's what they do at Wild Alaskan Company. Wild Alaskan Company delivers high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood right to your door. Premium cuts, ready to prepare, easy to cook. Choose from salmon, cod, halibut, and more, with different specials to explore every month. And they offer a 100% guarantee or your money back. I got the Wild Combo Box and couldn't be more impressed. Each piece of fish individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Very environmentally conscientious. Wild Alaskan Company's seafood is how nature intended it to be. Never farmed or modified, and no antibiotics. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's Wild Alaskan, A-L-A-S-K-A-N. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. Wild Alaskan company.com/Gordon. Use that URL to let them know that we sent you.
Glad you're with us. There once was a time when college football was so flush with cash that it could afford to turn up its nose at partnerships with sin industries like alcohol, cannabis, and sports gambling. The pandemic has erased moral qualms. More from this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
With college athletic department budgets getting walloped by the pandemic, many are doing something they vowed never to do: turn to alcohol sales, gambling partnerships, and even cannabis sponsorships to bring in money. Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal with the story. Lane, how hard were budgets hit in 2020?
It's hard to totally quantify just how hard the budgets were hit, because a lot of the schools took measures to kind of mitigate some of the COVID hit. But, you know, revenue in a normal year is largely something that comes from ticket sales to events and televising games. And when you lose games because there's an outbreak on your team and you can't play, that's obviously a hit. And it's a huge hit when you have no fans in the stands. So a lot of these athletic departments furloughed employees for an extended period of time. They had layoffs. There was lots of measures that went in. But for the most part, you're talking about a loss somewhere in the millions. And, you know, it didn't help that in order to safely try to play athletics, the cost of testing and contact tracing and just, you know, making sure that these athletes could be healthy also went up. So it is probably a seven-figure number at most schools, if not higher.
Now, Lane, for years and years, most college venues shied away from alcohol for a number of reasons. Why did they do that, and why did they change their mind?
Part of it was a safety thing where they didn't want drunk fans all over the stadium. But I think what's funny is they didn't realize that that sort of, you know, ban on alcohol sales in a stadium, also on college campuses, where probably 3/4 of the students that are there are not of legal drinking age, it's kind of a bad look to be able to have that, you know, passed around freely. But it, you know, encourages behavior where people would just run out during halftime to the parking lot, you know, have a lot of drinks, come back in, and you ended up getting sort of, you know, I guess poor choices in terms of alcohol consumption and a lot more incidents for the campus police to deal with. And they actually found that when you started selling alcohol in the stadium, and most places cut it off at the end of the 3rd quarter, but when you do that, people drink in a much more responsible way because they're not in a rush. They're not trying to knock back a few really quickly so they can get in and watch the game. And, you know, part of the reason why that's changed is just partially a stigma. And there's a lot of places in college sports where you still can't buy alcohol in the stadium, but it's also potentially incredibly lucrative. And that's something that, you know, these schools are looking to maximize revenues and definitely increase them in areas where they had no previous streams of revenue, given the way that the pandemic affected their bottom line.
Lane, did they start making the decision a long time ago, or did it kind of happen maybe during the season last year and over the winter as they were preparing for 2021?
So this one's kind of a long time coming, and that there are a lot of stadiums where they've actually sold alcohol for a long time. And, you know, LSU famously drank the West Virginia football stadium dry in like 2010 when they went to visit for an away game. But I think there's more and more that have started to embrace alcohol in the last calendar year, yes.
We're speaking with Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal. Now, another area that was kind of taboo for a long time was the gambling partnerships and sponsorships. How did that change?
Oh, yes. Yes, and that has started to change mainly because of the way that gambling laws in the United States have changed, in that, you know, it's legal in, I think, somewhere around 9 states, and many of those have Power 5 college football teams. And it's not necessarily that you're going to be betting in the stadium in all these places, or that, you know, the student athletes could bet, but they are opening up college sports as an area to get involved in that space and to partner with some of these companies, just because, yeah, it's becoming something that's far less taboo. A lot of people play fantasy sports, which is technically a form of betting. And with the emergence of, you know, DraftKings and FanDuel, like when you watch an NFL game on TV, you can't go a single commercial break without seeing an ad for gambling. So it's just a lot more ubiquitous in, you know, sports. And I think because it was sort of accepted at some of these professional leagues for a few years, it's starting to trickle into the college space as well.
Are schools starting to partner with specific brands?
Yes. So the University of Colorado has a deal with PointsBet, and I think LSU actually just this last week announced a deal with a different company, and one of the bowl games that's in the near six, the Fiesta Bowl, has a deal with, I think, Caesars Entertainment. And it's been pretty fascinating to see, you know, the exact tie-ups, because they vary by deal. But oftentimes it just means that they're promoting this one specific brand, encouraging fans to download that app to place their bets. And there's there's been 5 or 6 instances of that in college sports so far, which, you know, going from zero in the last year, that's a pretty big increase.
That's Wall Street Journal sports reporter Lane Higgins with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Apply for a loan with a bank and you might get free coffee. But Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers personal loans with no fees, ever. So consolidate debt with a no-fee personal loan from Marcus by Goldman Sachs or get free coffee. Go to marcus.com to learn more about our no-fee personal loans and other products today. Lending and deposits provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka, last full weekend of September. Coming up this half hour, tech weapons to combat global warming. Also, rethinking financial behaviors. Plus, crowded national parks may keep a COVID strategy. And the Desert Kingdom dreams of winter Olympic greatness. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, with the formal end of armed conflicts like in Afghanistan, what if we took this new excess military capacity and money and built, quote, weapons to fight fires and floods? Rob Enderle, founder of the tech firm The Enderle Group, imagines a shift in focus of military manufacturing from wars to alleviating disasters. Rob, explain.
Well, so the point I open up with is one of the issues you've got when you have a war the size and scales we had with Afghanistan is what do you do with that military industrial complex once you shut it off? I mean, suddenly they go from having high sales to no sales, and they're very motivated in starting the next war. In fact, you've been seeing some of the rhetoric. You can already see people talking about, well, we got to go back into Afghanistan again. We got to fight the Taliban. But largely that's being promoted by the folks that want to sell the weapons. Trillions of dollars worth of revenue just went down. And if you look at the situation we've got now in the U.S., there's not a lot of risk we're taking or threat we're taking from Afghanistan. We're burning up on the West Coast and we're flooding out on the East Coast. So what we need is that revenue, that weapons investment to go into things that fight fires and can mitigate the damages with respect to floods. And that just means taking a look at what it is we're building. I started with fire mitigation because I'm on the West Coast and I seem to be perennially surrounded by smoke this summer. It's been really bad out here. And we often use repurposed air tankers to do fire mitigation. But the problem with using tankers is, one, they don't fly particularly well when you've got low visibility. Very dangerous. And with fires, you get lots of smoke, which means you've got low visibility. Yeah. Plus, you've got issues with people flying drones all over the place that makes them very hazardous for the air crews. So a number of times this year, they had to ground the tanker fleet because of either smoke, low visibility, or people flying drones in the fire area, which is problematic. Well, we just released a drone air tanker, a high capacity air tanker, the Boeing Stingray drone, that looks incredibly promising in terms of obsolescing air tankers as crewed vehicles to begin with. We are working on drones that can go in and remove wounded soldiers. Those same drones could be used to evacuate wounded hikers. Much smaller shrouded rotors can land in forested areas and get people out where they're trapped. And without putting a lot of first responders at risk.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle, principal analyst at the Enderle Group. He's written a piece for TechNewsWorld.com called Tech Weapons We Need to Combat Global Warming. What was the point you made about these distributed sensor networks?
Well, so Huawei, to fight the rainforest destruction, Huawei developed with the Rainforest Connection repurposed cell phones. We're dumping, you know, millions of cell phones into landfills every year, and so what they came up with this idea is, rather than dumping these things in landfills, why don't we reuse them as sensors? I mean, each cell phone has microphones in it, cameras. They're relatively rich with regard to a sensor set, and if you can convert them to another purpose, in this case, recase them, give them a power supply, and then place them on trees, then you can determine, they can certainly listen to, as they were deployed in the rainforest, you can listen for things like chainsaws and then deploy people to stop the destruction of the forest that way. They can also listen to the sound of fires, sense heat, and of course they've got cameras, so you could put facial recognition software on them, not would be facial recognition in this case, be looking for fires on them, and they can see a fire in a remote area fire up where an observer might see it, may not see it, or maybe too small for a satellite.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, founder of the tech firm The Enderle Group. Coming up next, practicing better financial behaviors. It's true, half of our faces have been hidden for a while, and now that we can really be outside again, it's time to pay attention to that lower half again, the part that Harry's specializes in. Get your smooth, clean-shaven look back again with Harry's. Redeem a Harry's trial set when you visit harrys.com/deal. I'm constantly amazed at how close my shave is every day. With the ergonomic handle, Harry's blades glide and leave my skin incredibly smooth. All for as low as $2 a blade. Still, even now that they're sharper and last longer than ever, Harry's is giving their best offer to our listeners. New Harry's customers can redeem a starter set for just $3 at harrys.com/deal. You get a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover to protect your blades when you're on the go. That's a $13 value for just $3. There's truly never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/deal to try Harry's today. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. How do we avoid buying and selling our stock market holdings at the wrong time? Morningstar offers some sensible advice, such as sticking with broadly diversified funds, avoiding funds that are more specialized or more volatile, and putting our saving and investment programs on autopilot. Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com, has a couple of others. Jonathan, how do you see it?
So there was a recent academic study that came out of MIT, which involved looking at brokerage accounts, where there was a 90% drop over the course of 1 month in the amount that account was allocated to the stock market, with at least half of that reduction coming because of trades rather than because of a market decline. And what the academics involved did was then look at the characteristics of those who did freak out like this. And it was interesting. I mean, it was predominantly men, predominantly people over age 45. These were people who tended to have families. And maybe most notably, these were people who said they had excellent investment experience or knowledge. So these were the sort of people you would think would be staying the course, sort of older, you know, seasoned investors. But it seems that wasn't the case.
You know, I've been there before. I understand that panic when you feel like I'm going to be left with nothing if the market continues to go down, right? You just sort of see it slipping away. You can visually see it almost.
I think that's the case, but it's maybe less about panic, though obviously people are concerned about losing everything, and more about excessive self-confidence. So these are older investors. They're people who describe themselves as having excellent knowledge or experience, and they are male. We know males tend to be overly self-confident. Yeah. And you put that all together, they see something going on in the market, and they make these big, bold moves. Now, one of the things that was interesting about the study was initially, with these big, bold moves, these investors did indeed protect themselves. Their initial losses as a result of the ongoing market decline were less, because these freakouts tended to occur when the market was indeed declining. But the problem was these investors were slow to get back into the market. So they missed out on the subsequent rebound, and as a consequence, they hurt their long-term investment results.
Mm. We're speaking with Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece called Behaving Badly, and it's about avoiding buying and selling holdings at the wrong time. So one of the things you suggest here is to play dumb. How so?
One of the things that causes us to act is we think we know something about the future. You know, we think we know where the market is going, or we think that we know which stocks are going to take off. And more often than not, this knowledge turns out to be poisonous to our financial future, because we act on this knowledge, we make these big investment bets, and we end up holding the wrong portfolio. So if there's one piece of advice I would give people coming out of this research, it's this: don't think you know anything. Don't think you know where the market is headed. Don't think you know which stocks are going to take off. And instead, buy a broadly diversified portfolio and just hang on through the ups and downs. And history tells us people who do that, long-term buy and hold investors with diversified portfolios, are the people who clock the big gains over time.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com. Coming up next, national parks embrace a more permanent reservation system. Dell's semi-annual sale is the perfect opportunity for a significant business upgrade. Save up to 45% on Dell computers built for business with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, enjoy special pricing on Dell docks, monitors, servers, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Succeed anywhere with Windows 10 Pro. Speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today to find the right tech for your business with fast, free shipping. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Hey, glad you're with us. Many tourists were surprised this year to find new systems in place requiring reserve time slots to enter some of the most popular U.S. national parks at peak hours. With the summer rush done, parks are now analyzing those pilot programs to figure out what worked. Parkgoers should expect some type of congestion management plans in the future. It's a story by Allison Poley, travel reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Allison, what do we have?
National park visitation was increasing even before the pandemic. And then when people were looking for outdoor-friendly destinations, they thought of national parks, and visitation increased pretty dramatically at some of these parks. So as a way to help make sure that visitors are safe while also protecting the natural resources, some parks had implemented reservation systems. And that can be for all of the park or for part of the park. So Glacier National Park, for example, implemented a ticketing system for its Going to the Sun Road, which is a 50-mile stretch that goes through the park. And you needed a ticket to get in there, but not for other parts of the park. And so they had that in place from Memorial Day to Labor Day, and now they're considering whether they'll keep that next year during the busy season.
Might that not be confusing? Because certain times of day you need a pass, and then it's certain parts of the park.
Yeah, exactly. So there was some confusion, especially because these are new systems and they're pilot programs, so they may or may not stick. So some visitors had no idea that they needed a reservation and either showed up to the gate without one or showed up near the park, found out that they needed to get one. They were all taken, so then they had to figure something else out. So I spoke to one person who did not have a reservation when she was going to Glacier. So she and her family got up at 3:30 in the morning so they could get in before reservations were required. And that starts at 6 a.m.
Wow. All right. So how are the tickets gotten? You log in, you get them on your phone, they're digital, or can you show up at a local shop outside the park and pick up paper passes? How does it work?
They're online and they're sold through recreation.gov. So what you would do is log on, and the parks, each park has a slightly different system for exactly when you're able to get them. Some are the month before, some are 60 days before. And then they also have the more last minute options, which might be about 48 hours before or even a couple hours before. And so people needed to figure out exactly when to log on at the exact time to snag one of these tickets, which were in high demand this year especially.
Wow. We're speaking with Allison Poley, travel reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Crowded National Parks Have Turned to Reservations. Some are considering keeping them. So if you are not aware, can you? Is it like a restaurant where you can show up and hope there's a cancellation and you can take somebody's spot?
Not quite. You do need to have this in advance. And so some people do drop tickets or they decide that they're not going to keep them. So you might be able to find them last minute. But no, it's not the same where you can just pull up and get in anyways. You really do need to have that in advance if the park requires it.
Thanks, Allison. Allison Poley, travel reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, the desert country with winter Olympic dreams. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. We'll finish with this. The desert kingdom of Saudi Arabia has set a lofty target for sporting greatness, the snowy peaks of next year's Winter Olympics. The country has hired coaches from Europe and invested heavily in training as it prepares seven skiers and snowboarders to compete on the slopes at the Beijing Games. Some of the Saudi athletes already compare themselves to the Jamaican bobsled team that made its debut at the 1988 Calgary Games and, of course, inspired the movie Cool Runnings. The Wall Street Journal says the Olympic dream, even if no one actually wins a medal, is already having an effect on Saudi Arabia's snow-starved sports fans. A private developer, for example, plans to break ground this year on what it says will be the region's largest indoor ski slope, covering around 10 acres at a Riyadh shopping mall. A tech-focused city-state planned in the country's northwest corner, where summer temperatures can top 100 degrees, also envisions hosting a ski resort. It blew artificial snow this year on a nearby mountain and invited one of the Olympic hopefuls to film a promo. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.